I was glad to wake up this morning to find the room had stopped swaying and my stomach had settled. I felt quite sick during the dream.
Well, you can stop fretting. I'll show Jetta how to open the passage to this room right now, and then show her the others when everyone is up and about,
Ollie said, standing and walking Alec to the door.
Why do you not go down and break your fast? We'll be along as soon as Mavis... Oh, here she is,
Ollie said dryly. He opened the door to reveal Mavis on the other side with her hand raised. Stepping back and pulling Alec with him, they let Mavis enter, and then Ollie urged his brother out the door, saying,
"We'll be down shortly."
"You do not have to wait for me, husband,"
Jetta said, smiling at Mavis as the woman hurried to her side and took the hairbrush.
"Two of the men can wait to escort me, and you can take two of the men with you below."
"They are your guards, wife, not mine," he said, moving over to sit on the end of the bed and watch Mavis work on her hair. "Besides, I want to see how Mavis puts the call in. Then I can help you with it the next time we ride out early."
Jetta couldn't hide her surprise at those words. He was willing to help her with her hair. Truly, he was a rare find.
"Do not look so surprised, lass,"
Mavis said with amusement.
"Of course you want to learn how to fix your hair. Ollie was always a smart lad. He kens you'll be less likely to ride off with him for some hogmagandy by the loch if you're always returning with your hair in the state it is now."
Eyes widening in alarm, Jetta pulled away from Mavis's ministrations and rushed to the mirror. Her jaw dropped in horror when she saw herself. The wind on the ride back had only half-dried it, but it had left it in a flyaway mess. Chuckling at her expression, Mavis walked up behind her and began brushing her hair again.
"'Tis fine. I'll fix it. It'll no take a minute."
"I'm sorry, Ollie. It did not even occur to me to pull dresses out of the chests or press down on them," Niels said for probably the sixth time since he'd come below some 15 minutes ago. Niels and Edith had been the last of their party to wake up and come down to the trestle tables this morn. By the time the pair had come below, everyone else had broken their fast, and Jetta had returned to their bedchamber to lie down for a nap. He'd suggested it after she'd yawned for the 10th time. The ease with which she'd agreed told him just how tired she was. He shouldn't have woken her so early, Ollie supposed. But he'd known she'd want a bath this morning, and he had wanted to show her the loch. He'd thought to kill two birds with one stone by taking her along for his morning swim. "I should have driven my sword into the bundles of gowns," Niels muttered angrily, and then repeated, "I'm really sorry, brother."
"I ken. I'm no angry with you over it," Ollie said patiently, also for the sixth time.
"Aye, but if I just thought to do that, we'd already have the culprit. The stables near would have burned, and..."
"Niels,"
Ollie interrupted, finally losing some of his patience.
"You've naught to be sorry for. I doubt I would have thought to remove dresses or press on the material in each chest either. I probably would have just opened each to be sure they were still full of dresses and then moved on to the next. Stop apologizing. What's done is done."
"Aye," Niels mumbled. "I guess we should just be glad that is where they were hiding and know the pass elsewhere," he ended in a dull voice, remembering at the very last second not to mention the passages at the tables where anyone might hear.
Ollie frowned at the man's sallow complexion and the way he kept slurring his words.
"You're almost in worse shape than Alec this morn. What the devil did you two get up to last night?"
Niels grimaced. "Alec challenged me to a drinking game. I won."
Ollie smiled with amusement at the glum words.
"Bored, were you?"
Niels shrugged.
"More like frustrated.
The women had told us about the Balak dagger in the chest and their suspicions when we returned to the keep after the fire. We all discussed it, but wanted to talk to ye about it and see what you thought. But you did not come below that night. Or the next. Or... Aye. Ollie interrupted. He had barely left his bedchamber since carrying Jetta up there. He'd slipped out a time or two, but only to talk to Cullen to find out if there was anything amiss. Cullen had passed on any grievances or issues that had cropped up with the normal running a Buchanan, but hadn't known about the knife and what his family members were fretting over. So, Ollie had given the man orders on what to do about the issues he did know about, and had slipped back to rejoin Jetta. Never once during that time had Ollie asked how Katie was doing, and it had been a conscious decision on his part. He wanted just to spend time with Jetta for a day or two, and enjoy the fact that she was now his by law before rejoining the real world and addressing the waiting issues of murder attempts and whatnot. That vacation from real life was over now, though, and he was neck-deep in theories and worries about the attacker who was plaguing them. If he weren't, Laird, Ollie would march right back upstairs now, climb into bed with Jetta and forget all of this by losing himself in her body. Despite being Laird, the idea was a tempting one, and he briefly considered doing just that, but then pushed the tempting thought away. He had responsibilities here.
How long do you think 'twill take Alec and Conran to find out which ship lost its mast?
Ollie glanced up with a grimace at that question from Cam. After the first run of discussion about the Balak dagger, Ollie had sent Alec and Conran out again to travel to the various ports along the coast and ask around about the ship. This time, though, they would be looking for information on one that had lost its mast, rather than one that had sunk. The hope was that they would learn who might have been travelling on it, if not the name of the woman who had been strapped to it. The pair had been leaving as Niels had come below little more than 15 minutes ago, and since that was the only thing any of them could think to do at the moment, it would be a waiting game until they returned. Hopefully one of them would gain the information they needed. Although Ollie wasn't sure what he would do with it once he had it. Tell Jetta her full name, that of the ship she was on and where she was sailing to in hopes it would bring on the rest of her memories, and shed some light on who might be behind the attacks. Or ride out to confront her family and this man they wanted her to marry, to tell them she was a Buchanan now and would be protected, in hopes that would bring an end to the attacks. The problem was he needed more than just for the attacks to stop. While he and Jetta had survived the attacks on them, Katie still might not survive her own injury, and deserved justice.
It depends on whether they get lucky or no,
Ollie said finally.
If the boat launched from one of the nearer ports and returned there as well, they may be back in a day or so. If it launched from further away or limped into port further away, it could be as much as a week or a week and a half.
If the mast drifted up by the lodge, surely the ship would have had to limp into a nearby port, Greer said quietly. It could no travel far without the main mast.
Aye, Ollie agreed, but then pointed out, howbeit the storm could have pushed them a good distance along the coast ere dying out.
Oh, aye, Greer said with a frown.
Then 'tis a waiting game,
Dougal said solemnly. There is little we can do until the lads return with an answer.
Unless there is another attack,
Ollie said grimly.
That'll no happen, Dougal assured him. You have men on Jetta now, and at the door to Katie's room as well. Only a fool would try to go after either woman with guards in the way.
Mayhap, Ollie agreed solemnly.
He decided on stationing guards on Katie's door the morning after the wedding, when it occurred to him that it was unfair to use the lass's bait, even if he had someone in the passage watching over her. He had been in the stables with Jetta, and still she'd nearly died. They both had in that fire. He'd never forgive himself if something similar happened to the lass Geordie cared for. A sigh from Niels drew his gaze, and Ollie frowned. His brother was being unusually quiet. As a rule, the man had an opinion on everything, yet hadn't offered a single comment since his round of apologies. It was enough to worry him. That worry only deepened when he noted the way he was holding his head in his hands. Edith, he noticed, was watching her husband with deep concern too, which he understood completely. Ollie had never known Niels to suffer such a bad hangover. Even Alec hadn't been this bad when he came from his room. But then, if Niels had won, it meant that after Alec had acknowledged himself the loser, or passed out, as was usually the case since none of them had been raised quitters, Niels had then had to gulp back whatever remained in the pitcher, or pitchers they'd been drinking from. Still. "Why do you no retire to your room and rest a while?" Ollie suggested. I think I will," Niels said with relief, and stood up, only to sway a bit. When Edith rose as well, he waved her back down. "Nay, you do not need to come, wife. I'm just going to sleep, and I'd feel bad for you missing out on visiting with Sid and the others on my account. Besides, it is my own fault. I drank too much. Something I vow I'll not do again."
"Why do we not move over by the fire and continue working on those gowns we were making for Jetta?"
Joe suggested suddenly. And Ollie turned from watching Niels walk away to see that Edith was staring after her husband with deep concern on her face. Joe had apparently noticed that and hoped to distract the woman. Fortunately, Maureen and Sid seemed to realize that too and stood quickly.
"Oh, hi, we should do that,"
Maureen said with good cheer Ollie suspected was feigned.
"Come along, Edith. Niels'll be fine. A little rest and he'll be his old self."
"Aye,"
Edith whispered with little conviction as she stood to follow the women to the chairs by the fire.
"The women are making my wife dresses," Ollie asked with surprise as he watched them move over to the chairs set up by the fire.
"Aye, they've no been able to find the gowns missing from the chest we think the attacker hid in. Since they were the only ones they thought would fit or look good on Jetta, they decided to use some of the fabric Joe supplied and make her a couple of new ones," Greer answered. Nodding, Ollie switched his gaze back to Niels, frowning at the way he was dragging his feet as he made his way above stairs. He wasn't the only one to notice.
"Mayhap Rory should take a look at Niels," Dougal suggested, watching their brother as well. "Drink does not usually hit him this hard, and I'm thinking..."
Turning a sharp eye on him when he paused, Ollie asked,
"What are you thinking?"
Dougal hesitated and then shook his head.
"I dinna ken what to think. 'Tis just that I've never seen Niels like this, and with everything that's been going on here."
"Did you notice his eyes?" Greer asked suddenly.
"What about his eyes?"
Ollie asked at once. Rory was always looking at his patient's eyes to see if they could tell him something. "The blacks in the centre were almost pin-sized, they were so small," Greer said with a frown.
"I dinna ken what that means, but they did not look normal."
Ollie didn't know what that might mean either, but a glance at Cam, Greer and Dougal showed that the blacks of their eyes were bigger in the dim lighting of the Great Hall. Nowhere near pin-sized. Mouth tightening, he stood up.
"I'll go ask Rory to take a look at him now."
Leaving them at the table, he moved quickly upstairs. He was stepping onto the landing when movement out of the corner of his eye caught his attention. Turning his head quickly, he caught a glimpse of Jetta slipping into Niels and Edith's room and paused abruptly. He watched with surprise as the door closed and then glanced the other way up the hall. wondering where the hell her guards had gone. But the hall was empty in both directions now. Thinking he'd give the men who were supposed to be guarding her a good bollocking when he found them, Ollie headed toward Neil's and Edith's room, thinking to see Jetta safely back to her chamber before he went to talk to Rory about Neil's. He'd reached the door and had raised his hand to knock when he heard Neil's raised voice.
"God, woman, leave me alone! I do not feel well!"
Ollie's hackles rose along with his eyebrows at Neil's tone of disgust, and the fact that he'd called Jetta woman as if it was an insult. Jetta's answer when it came was too soft for him to hear more than a murmur of sound, but he heard Neil's response quite clearly again.
"Have you lost your mind, Jetta?"
Niels said, sounding more confused than angry.
"He's my brother and you're his wife!"
Ollie eased the door open a crack and this time heard Jetta's bitter words in response.
"Open your eyes and look at me. I am beautiful. Do I not deserve a beautiful man? You are beautiful. All of you Buchanan brothers are, except for Ollie."
"But he loves you and you love him," Niels protested, sounding befuddled.
"Love,"
she said with disgust.
"He is a monster with that scar. It turns my stomach just to look at him. I could not bear his touching me. No woman would. Every time I see his face, I think someone should kill him while he sleeps."
Ollie stiffened, his heart shriveling in his chest.
"But you would be different,"
she went on.
"And I know you must want me too."
"All I want is to sleep until I stop wanting to puke up my guts," Niels moaned. Ollie heard some rustling sounds and opened the door further to see that Niels was reclined on the bed with his arm over his face. What little Ollie could see of his skin looked green. That didn't seem to bother Jetta, however. She was climbing onto the bed, and as he watched, she kissed his brother. Mouth tightening and teeth grinding, he watched Niels turn his head with a start and tangle his hands in her hair to drag her face back away from him.
"The devil take you!" Niels growled. "Go away and leave me alone!"
"Nay, I want you to pleasure me."
Ollie started into the room, and then stopped and backed up instead, his hands clenching. He didn't dare intervene. In the state he was in, he feared he very well might beat his lying, faithless whore of a wife to death for her perfidy. Rustling drew his attention away toward the stairs, and much to his horror he saw Edith hurrying up the last few steps to the upper landing. He couldn't let her see this. Niels was doing nothing wrong, but Edith would still be hurt if she walked in on this, and it was bad enough that he was suffering. Pulling the bedchamber door silently closed, he turned to rush back toward her.
"Ollie,"
Edith said with surprise when she reached the top of the stairs and he hurried forward to block her way.
"I was just going to check on Niels. Is he..."
"Rory is with him." Ollie lied and took her arm to turn her back to the stairs. "Why do we no let him examine him and see what he has to say?"
"Oh, but..."
Dragging her feet, Edith glanced back over her shoulder.
"I want to see if he's okay."
"Aye, Rory will come below and let us ken once he's examined him," Ollie said, urging her along. "'Tis better if we no distract him while he works, else he might miss something."
"Oh, aye, I suppose,"
Edith said on a sigh and stopped facing him. "Good," Ollie muttered and walked her the rest of the way down the stairs and to the trestle tables. "Sit here with Dougal, Cam and Greer, and I will just..." He didn't bother finishing his sentence. He just had to get away from everyone for a minute. The scene he'd just witnessed upstairs was replaying itself in his head over and over.
"He is a monster with that scar. It turns my stomach just to look at him. I could not bear his touching me. No woman would. Every time I see his face, I think someone should kill him while he sleeps."
The words were like razor-sharp blades shredding his soul. To think Jetta,
His Jetta, the women he loved and whom he'd thought loved him, felt that way. It was Adira all over again. Only worse this time. Because he hadn't loved Adira. He'd thought he had. But the pain he'd experienced when she rejected him was nothing compared to the agony ripping him apart now. Ollie just didn't understand it. Jetta had never once visibly flinched from his scar. Not that he'd seen, anyway, he thought. And then recalled that he had been asleep when she first woke up. And he had no idea how long she'd been awake before he opened his eyes. Perhaps she'd shown her revulsion then when he couldn't see it, and had managed to hide it afterward. If so, what else had she hidden? Did she really not remember anything? Or had that been a lie too? Even her fear could be a lie, he supposed. Perhaps it all was. Perhaps it had all been lies and pretending to love him to hide at Buchanan from whatever truth she wasn't telling him. And dear God, she was a good liar. He could still hear her sweet declarations of love in his head. Those in her fake moans of pleasure tortured him as he thought on how she'd pretended to pant for him, and feigned such an eager response to his kisses and touch. All lies. The woman was.
Mallard!
Ollie turned sharply and stared when he saw Cullen hurrying toward him. This was the man who should have been guarding his wife. If he had been, Ollie would have never witnessed that scene in the room, and would still happily believe his wife really loved him. His life would not now be turning to ashes around him.
Where the hell were you? You were to be guarding my wife!
He roared furiously, taking out his pain and anger on the man. If he'd done his job, he would still be blissfully ignorant of Jetta's true nature. And if she'd killed him in his sleep as she'd threatened, at least he'd have died happy, thinking himself loved and cared for. Not destroyed by the knowledge that she had never wanted or loved him, and no one ever could or would. Thanks to this man, he'd die a lonely and bitter old man with no one at his side.
I was, Cullen said with confusion. And the men are with her still. Well, they're back out in the hall now, and not in the bedchamber with her, as we have been for the past hour since we escorted her back to your bedchamber. But they're there guarding her, as we were ordered, and I would be too, only she sent me to fetch you back.
Ollie stared at him blankly, trying to absorb his words.
What? Shortly after she retired to your chamber, she opened the door, poked her head out and asked would we help her move the bed.
Cullen explained.
Well, of course we said aye, but it was no just the bed. She wanted rearranging the whole room, Mallard, and the room next to it too. We're done now, and she sent me to fetch you to see if you like it.
Grimacing, he added.
And I'm sure enough hoping you do. I dinna relish moving everything back again if you don't.
Ollie stared at him blankly for a moment, and then strode past him toward the keep. His mind was spinning. Nothing made sense. He'd seen Jetta in Niels and Edith's room with his own eyes. He'd heard her say those things. Yet Cullen was claiming he and the others had been in the bedchamber with her since she'd gone above stairs. Maybe she'd slipped out while the men were busy, he thought. But that didn't seem likely. If there had only been two men, she might have managed to slip away, but four. Ignoring the people at the table, Ollie strode straight upstairs and to his room. The other three guards were there now, positioned one on either side of the door and one against the opposite wall, facing the door. Ollie ignored them as well and stepped into his bedchamber and then paused abruptly when he saw Jetta standing on a wobbly chair next to the bed, fiddling with the drapes hanging from the canopy overhead. The bed, however, was now closer to the window. In fact, everything in the room had been moved, as Cullen had said. For a moment, all Ollie could do was stare as his mind tried to make sense of this morning's events. And then it occurred to him that Jetta was wearing a different gown. It was the same gown he'd helped her don in this room and at the lock this morning. But not the gown she'd been wearing in Neil's room, he realized. That one had been silver. Jetta also didn't quite fill out her dress, as well as the other Jetta had filled out the silver dress. That Jetta's clothes had fit snugly. This one's did not. The gown was a size or two too large at present, because she was underweight from her illness. Cursing, Jetta tilted her head at a different angle as she tried to see whatever it was she was doing, and Ollie's gaze was drawn to the caul Mavis had fixed in her hair after they'd returned from the loch. He'd watched the woman put it on for Jetta, and suspected it wouldn't normally be that complicated a piece to put the average woman's hair up in, but it was more so on Jetta. Mavis had had to draw hair from the top and sides and then braid and curl the strands to cover the large spot where her hair was missing before pinning the caul in place. It was something he was quite sure Jetta couldn't manage on her own. Yet she'd had the caul on when she left the table. Hadn't been wearing it in Niels and Edith's room, but was wearing it again now. Not only had she not been wearing it in Niels and Edith's room, he realized suddenly as a picture of Niels tangling his hands in her hair to pull her away from him rose up in his mind. That Jetta had had long black hair. Everywhere. There had been no bald spot from where they'd shaved her head. In fact, it was her long hair at the back that Niels had caught at to pull her away from him. It hadn't been Jetta, Ollie realized with relief. And then frowned. If the woman hadn't been Jetta, then who was she? Chapter 18.
Oh, husband! Cullen found you. Good. What do you think of the room?
Ollie jerked out of his thoughts and focused on the woman who had spoken. His wife. Who apparently had a twin running about, trying to seduce his brothers and rip his heart out with both her words and action. Ollie stopped abruptly as that thought ran through his mind. A twin? Jetta had remembered having a sister. Could she be a twin and the woman he'd seen in Niels and Edith's room? Other than having all of her hair and a healthy weight, they had been identical. No, he argued with himself. Even if Jetta did have a twin, the woman couldn't possibly know she was here. No one knew. He'd seen to that. Still, what other explanation was there? Frowning, Ollie opened his mouth, intending to ask her to try to remember if her sister was a twin, and then abruptly closed it again. Jetta never remembered anything when asked outright, and trying merely caused her pain. The only memory she'd regained to date had come to her from the side, as Rory put it. He had to think of a way of getting the information without actually asking for it.
Husband, do you not like it?
Ollie glanced toward her, a little distracted until he noted her expression. Jetta looked uncertain and even disappointed that he might not like what she had done, and he forced a smile and nod.
Aye, 'tis nice, he assured her quickly.
Oh, good,
she said with relief, and beamed at him before turning her attention back to what she was doing. The moment she did, he turned his own attention back to trying to work out how to trick some memories out of her. Or, perhaps, into her. Keeping her distracted would probably help, he thought, and asked,
"What are you doing now?"
Oh, I'm just trying to sort out how these drapes are fixed to the canopy around the bed. I thought with all the fabric Joe gave us, it might be nice to use some to make new drapes. These ones are old and a bit frayed.
He murmured, and not thinking of anything better to try, said,
"You did not mention your sister was your twin. She seems much different than you."
Oh, aye, she muttered distractedly. "We are twins in countenance, not character, as Mother used to say."
"So she is not like you,"
he asked carefully.
Oh, nay,
she said on a laugh, tipping her head farther back to look at the cloth.
We are like night and day. Cat was always chatty and charming, while I was quiet and more reserved. Mother used to say Cat was a peacock, and I more a...
Oh,
she said softly. Jetta stilled suddenly, her hands upraised but no longer moving. Unfortunately, Ollie couldn't see her expression any more since she'd tilted her head back a moment earlier. It wasn't until she drew a hand down to rub at her forehead that he realized the natural memories had stopped and she was now trying to force them. Ollie started to reach for her, intending to distract her, but stopped before touching her. The other Jetta's words echoing in his head.
He is a monster with that scar. It turns my stomach just to look at him. I could not bear his touching me. No woman would. Every time I see his face, I think someone should kill him while he sleeps.
Retrieving his hands, he said. Jetta?
I?
She murmured, lowering her head and continuing to rub it. Her expression was a combination of concentration and pain.
Jetta?
Ollie repeated with a frown, clenching his hands into fists to keep from touching her.
You have to stop, lass.
I just... There's something important on the tip of my... I just need to remember.
Nay, lass, you need to stop,
Ollie growled, his concerned gaze sliding from her to the door. He'd left the thick Jetta with Niels, who hadn't been in great shape. He shouldn't have left him, and now he couldn't leave Jetta until she stopped trying to remember. Turning his head back to his wife, he said,
Please, Jetta, you have to stop. Jetta!
Crying out, he caught her as she wobbled and then fell off the chair. Ollie clutched her to his chest briefly, and then moved around to the other side of the bed and set her in it. Straightening, then, he stared down at her with a frown. Her eyes were closed and he was sure she'd fainted. But her face was a picture of pain. It had followed her into unconsciousness. She'd pushed too hard again. Ollie stared at her helplessly for a minute and then headed for the door, muttering,
I'll fetch Rory.
Opening the door, he stepped out into the hall and growled, Do not let Jetta leave the room. And no one goes in but Rory or me.
Aye, my lord,
Cullen said solemnly. Nodding, Ollie hurried up the hall to the room where Katie had been put. He nodded at the soldiers posted on either side of the door and opened it to glance in. A frown claimed his face when he saw that only Geordie and Katie were in sight.
Where's Rory? He asked. He rode out to gather some more of his herbs. Between Jetta and Katie, he's run low and needed more.
Geordie answered, and then raised his eyebrows.
Why? What's about?
Cursing, Ollie started to run away, but then paused and said grimly,
If someone you think is Jetta comes in here, do not trust her, and under no circumstances leave Katie alone with her. She is not Jetta.
What?
Geordie gasped with dismay.
I'll explain later,
Ollie growled, and pulled the door closed to continue on to Niels and Edith's room. Without Rory here, there was nothing he could do for Jetta at the moment, and he had to get to Niels. He never should have left him alone with the wench. She'd already shot Katie with an arrow, probably poisoned the stew Mavis and Jetta were meant to eat, pushed Jetta down the stairs, and set fire to the stables. He had no idea what she might do next. In fact, he had no idea why she'd done what she had so far. Katie had obviously been a case of mistaken identity. Jetta's twin, Cat, she had called her, must have thought her Jetta when she shot the arrow at her. But he had no idea why she was trying to kill her sister, or how she'd even discovered Jetta was still alive and here, or... Ollie's thoughts died abruptly as he neared Niels and Edith's door and it opened. He stiffened, preparing to leap forward and grab Cat, but it was Edith who came out. The moment she closed the door, Ollie rushed the last few steps, caught her arm and drew her quickly away up the hall.
Ollie?
Edith gasped with surprise.
What?
Pausing by the stairs, Ollie hissed. I told you to wait below.
Aye, but then Rory came below and headed out to the keep, so I thought I'd check on Niels.
She explained with a frown.
Rory has no even been to see him yet.
Nay, I had not got to him yet, and then he headed out to get some weeds, he muttered, glancing toward the door Edith had just come out of. What happened when you entered the room?
Happened?
She asked with bewilderment. What were Jetta and Niels doing? He asked more specifically.
Jetta?
She raised her eyebrows with surprise.
She was not there. Niels was lying in bed holding his head. He is in terrible pain,
she added with concern. Niels is alone? Ollie asked, ignoring the rest of her words.
Aye,
she assured him.
Do you ken how long Rory will be? Niels really needs one of his medicinals. He's in agony.
Nay, he growled. Come with me. Taking her arm, he ushered her back to the door and then hesitated before saying, You'd best wait out here until I'm sure the room truly is empty.
What?
She asked with surprise, but he was already opening the door and slipping inside. Niels lay in bed, as Edith had said, but appeared to be asleep. Leaving him for the moment, Ollie glanced around the room. It seemed empty, and there were precious few spots to hide. Under the bed and in the chests in the room were the only options. Recalling the chests in the hall and the women's theory that it was where the attacker had hidden after pushing Jetta down the stairs, Ollie walked to the first one, lifted the lid and then began to drag out the dresses it held.
Ollie, what are you doing?
Glancing around at that cry, he frowned at Edith. I told you to wait in the hall.
Aye, but stop that,
she hissed with an anxious look at Niels as she rushed forward to snatch the dresses from him. Sorry, Ollie muttered and pressed down on the remaining gowns in the chest rather than pull any more out. Reassured that there was nothing but material in that chest, Ollie left it and moved on to the next. This one held plaids, linen shirts and weapons, he saw when he opened the lid. Niels' chest, he realized, and scooped several items out before dropping them back in and closing the lid.
You think the attacker is here?
Edith said with realization. Ollie didn't comment, but moved to the bed and dropped to look under it. Nothing. Kat must have left before Edith entered. Cursing, he got back to his feet.
Ollie!
Edith said as he turned ahead for the door. When he didn't respond, she dropped the dresses and rushed to catch his wrist.
Ollie, what the devil is going on?
Ollie pulled his arm away and almost left without responding, but then paused and turned to face her and asked, Did you pass Jetta in the hall or on your way here?
Jetta? Nay, she said with a frown. There was no one but the soldiers in the hall.
The soldiers? He breathed and turned to the door again.
Ollie, damn it!
Edith snapped, grabbing his wrist again. It was the curse, rather than her hold on his hand, that stopped Ollie this time. Edith just was not the sort to curse, which told him how upset she was. Facing her again, he blurted, I'm quite sure the culprit behind the attacks is Jetta's sister, Kat.
What?
She gasped with dismay.
Why?
A dinner ken, he admitted grimly, glancing at his brother. But she and Jetta are twins and she was in here earlier. I thought her Jetta, but Jetta was in our room with the guards the whole time, and... Taking a breath, he paused to order his thoughts and then said, Jetta is in our room. She does not ken Kat is here. I've told the guard not to let her out of our chamber to prevent any confusion. So if you see someone you think is Jetta, it isn't her. Be on your guard, she's dangerous. He glanced to Niels again and added, You may want to stay here with Niels in case she returns. I'll tell the men in the hall to keep an eye on your door as well.
What are you going to do?
Edith asked with concern.
How will you find this sister?
Ollie hesitated and then decided, I'm going to arrange a search. Turning away then, he left the room before she could ask any more questions.
Jetta's head was pounding when she woke up. Wincing against the pain, she tried to lift her hand to her head and frowned when she couldn't. Confused, she opened her eyes and glanced around. She was on her side, with her hands restricted behind her back, tied up with something, and she was beside some kind of copper. The tub, Jetta realized suddenly. She was lying next to the tub she'd had two of the men bring up and set in the small room off the master chamber. Mavis had said Ollie's father had built the room, taking up a portion of the master bedchamber and a portion of the bedchamber next to it to make up this one. The wall between them had been torn down and two more put up in its place to make the small chamber. It had been the baby's room, where the latest addition to their family slept so that the babe could be close to his wife, without having to be in the same room with them. Jetta had thought it a good idea, but as they had no children yet, she decided it would make a good permanent spot for the bath. Well, permanent until they did have babies. Keeping the tub in here would save the servants from having to drag it up all those stairs when they wished to use it. The servants and soldiers apparently had a couple of large wooden tubs out behind the kitchens for their own use, and if guests or anyone else above stairs wished to use it, moving it from the little room to one of the others would surely be easier than carting it up the stairs. She'd thought it a grand idea, and Mavis had agreed, so she'd put her guards to work helping her rearrange both the master bedchamber and this tiny room off of it. But she hadn't expected to end up lying next to it all trussed up like a turkey ready to go in a cooking pot.
You are awake, sorry. Good.
Jetta lifted her head and glanced around at the woman standing behind her, and then rolled on her back to gape at her.
Caitlin.
The name was a whisper on her lips as the memories were instantly all back. They did not suddenly come rushing into her mind like water into a cup. Instead, it was as if a veil had been lifted and everything was just there, where it had always been. And it wasn't the appearance of her sister that did it. It was the old nickname Kat had used. Sorry, a bastardization of her true name that she'd always hated. Probably because it was usually followed by the taunting,
"Sorry, Sokka, such a sorry creature."
This time there was no aching head with the memories, but then she wasn't having to struggle to try to find them. They were all there. Her full name, her home at Fitton, her childhood, her parents and this woman. Her twin sister, who was as different from her as darkness was from light. Jetta also abruptly recalled how she'd come to be strapped to a mast, floating in the ocean. The memory made her scowl at her twin before she said, coldly,
"My apologies, Kat, but if you were hoping still to force me to France to marry your betrothed in your place, your plan will not work now. I am already married." I watch the wedding,
Kat said with amusement. Jetta stiffened in surprise.
You watched? How long have you been at Buchanan?
She asked. It was a question she hadn't considered before this. She hadn't really considered anything since finding Caitlin standing over her. Like, why was she lying on the floor in the small anteroom of the master bedchamber? Why she was all trussed up, where Ollie was. He'd been there when she'd got the memory back that Caitlin was her twin, and that she differed from her greatly. He'd stood beside her as she'd tried to remember more, sure something important waited just outside her reach. And he'd attempted to get her to stop trying, she recalled. But she'd been determined despite the pain it was causing her, and then...
I fainted again,
Jetta said with a frown.
I do not think fainting is the right word,
Caitlin said thoughtfully.
Nothing worked to wake you up after your husband finally left the room. Not slapping your face, not dumping water on you.
You did not even wake up when I rolled you off the bed and dragged you here by your feet.
Jetta peered at her with disbelief, then glanced down at herself, noting that her hair was damp and she was now wearing only her shift, which was caught up around her waist. Scowling, she struggled to a sitting position and did her best to push her shift down with hands that were bound and could only reach her sides, and that with some pain as her bindings cut into her skin.
Why am I tied up? And where is my gown?
She stopped mid-question as she looked at her sister, and realized Caitlin was wearing it now.
I like it, so I took it,
Kat said with a shrug.
I think it looks better on me. Do you not too?
Straightening her shoulders, Jetta glared at her sister.
What are you up to now, Kat?
Finishing what I started,
Kat said emotionlessly. Jetta narrowed her gaze.
I told you. You and father cannot make me marry your betrothed. I am already married.
Father cannot make you do anything,
Kat said idly, beginning to toy with a knife she held that Jetta hadn't noticed until she now began to turn it between her fingers.
Why is that?
Jetta asked wearily.
Because he's dead,
Kat said as if announcing that the sup was ready. Jetta's eyes widened at the news. She waited for dismay or grief to claim her. But mostly all she felt was resignation and relief. Her father had been drinking himself to death for years now. From the day the healer had told them that Mother would never recover from the illness slowly ravaging her, that unable to keep down food of any kind she would simply grow weaker and thinner, while suffering more and more pain, and then finally, mercifully, expire. Unable to accept that, her father had retreated from life and hidden away in a flagon of ale. Although he'd alternated that with hiding in a flask of whiskey or a cask of wine at times, it had depended on his mood and what was available to him.
He finally drank himself to death,
Jetta guessed quietly. Kat gave a little huff of laughter and said with disgust,
You always did think you knew everything. Am I wrong?
Jetta asked, watching her closely as she began to pick at the knots of the rope binding her hands. It had suddenly occurred to her that Kat may be behind the attacks here at Buchanan. She had no idea why that had not occurred to her before this. Perhaps because she had been too surprised that she was even here. She may even have been a little overwhelmed by the return of her memories. It was a lot to take. But the fact was, Kat was not only here, but apparently on finding her unconscious had stripped her of her dress, dragged her into this small room off the bedchamber and tied her hands behind her back. That hardly suggested she was here to apologize for what she'd done in the past and hoped for a closer relationship now that their father was dead. Come to that, neither did her attitude, Jetta thought grimly. Kat had always been a selfish, spoiled brat, but at least prior to this she had tried to camouflage it somewhat behind simpering smiles and batting eyelashes. There was none of that now. The woman before her was cold and bitter and so filled with rage. While Jetta had always just found her exasperating and even infuriating, the Caitlin before her now was actually a bit terrifying. She could believe she was behind the attacks, and was here to try to kill her. That being the case, getting herself free so that she had half a chance at defending herself seemed a good idea. But she needed time to do it. She had to keep Kat talking.
Aye, you're wrong, Kat sneered. Then why do you not tell me what has happened since I left?
She suggested quietly.
I presume after you and father saw me tied to the mast on that merchant ship, and on the way to marry your betrothed in your place, you rowed back to Fitton in triumph. Aye. She smiled crookedly. I thought I had won. I was very happy that day. I grinned all afternoon and all the next day during the journey back to Fitton. All afternoon and the next day?
Jetta asked with surprise.
It took us only one morning to make our way to the ship. Aye, but you would not allow father to drink on the journey out. And you did on the way back,
she guessed sadly.
Kat shrugged. We were celebrating on the way back, and I was so happy I did not mind the travel or even that our having to stop to allow Papa to recover from his drinking made it take longer than the journey out. And you know how I hate travel.
She grimaced.
Aye, you always considered it torture. 'Tis torture, Kat snapped. Hours being bounced around on a horse's back, usually in rain or at least a cold wind, followed by relieving yourself in a bush, eating cold food or something charred almost to ashes over the fire, and then sleeping on the cold, hard ground.
She shuddered with disgust.
There is nothing I hate worse than travel. But for that journey,
she added, her voice softening.
'Twas sunny every minute of both days. The food was bearable, and even the ground did not seem so cold or hard for sleeping.
Her smile faded, and she sighed.
And then we got home. I slept snug in my own bed, and I woke up in the morning to find Captain Casey waiting below.
Jetta blinked. She'd forgotten the name of the captain of the ship she'd been on. But then she hadn't known him long, and he'd been a contemptible cur. Unwashed, sour-smelling, and more than happy to tie her to his mast and deliver her to her death for a couple coins. Aye, she remembered him now. He and the ship he captained, Lecoq, had been at the center of her worst nightmare.
The ship had hit a storm, he said.
Kat continued grimly.
And he had lost the mast, and you along with it. His ship had been blown south, and he'd limped back into port the same evening he'd left. So, of course, once he'd finished seeing to the repair of his ship, he had rushed to Fitton to find out what father wished to do about that.
Voice turning hard, she added.
Father apologized prettily to me, but explained everything would be lost if we broke the contract. We had done our best, but he had to send me. When I protested, he had me bound and gagged and laid over the back of the captain's horse to send me to the man you had managed to elude. He was your betrothed, Kat,
Jetta pointed out angrily.
My own betrothed died in infancy. So?
Caitlin cried bitterly.
What? That makes it all right that you escaped and fled, leaving me to have to marry him.
Aye, Jetta thought, but said,
I did not escape and flee. In fact, I nearly died. The storm was horrible, Kat. The waves were as tall as mountains, and at one point the ship got buffeted about so that it was sideways to the waves and trapped between two of them. The ship tipped. The top of the mast and part of the crow's nest dipped into the water of one of the waves, and the whole mast ripped free, taking me with it.
She explained, recalling it as she did. That storm had been terrifying, and one she had been sure she would not survive even before the mast was ripped away. It had struck shortly after they left port, coming on quickly. It had seemed like mere minutes passed for it to go from a bit rough to wind and rain lashing at them, and thunder crashing around them so loud she thought she'd go deaf. The size of the waves was like nothing she had ever seen, and had left her trembling in terror and awe. Just when Jetta had thought it could not possibly get worse, the mast she'd been strapped to had sort of vibrated, a loud creaking striking her ears. And she'd opened her tightly closed eyes to see the top of the mast had disappeared into the wave that had moments ago been beside them, but was now above as the ship tipped in the water. Jetta had barely realized that when the mast had snapped just behind and a little above her knees with a thunderous crack,
that she'd felt in her very marrow. The next thing she knew, the mast was loose in the water, and her with it being tossed about as the monstrous waves had crashed down, driving the mast under the water where she was sure she would drown before the mast bobbed back to the surface. Jetta would catch a quick, panicked breath, only to find herself driven down under the water with the mast again. And each time it had happened, her head had crashed against the hard wood behind her, eventually leaving her dazed, confused, and aware only of pain and the struggle against drowning. And then she'd woken to calm. The storm was over, and she'd opened her eyes to see Ollie's face above her with a bright blue sky overhead. Jetta had thought him the most wondrous thing she had ever seen.
"Oh, bollocks!" Cat snapped. "What did you promise him?"
"Who? Ollie?"
Jetta asked with bewilderment.
"Nay, Captain Casey," Cat said furiously. "What did you give him? You had no coin. Did you let him bed you in exchange for his freeing you and claiming the mast broke off? Or was there really a storm and he freed you from the mast to allow you to find shelter in the cabin, but you escaped and leapt overboard in exchange for his kindness?"
Jetta stared at her with disbelief.
"Nay, of course not. The mast tore away, as I said. Did you not see that when he got you back to the ship?"
"Lecoq's mast was intact and fine when he got me to the ship. In fact, the moment we arrived, he strapped me to it exactly as he had you just 2 days before."
"Oh, aye. You said he had repaired it ere travelling to Fitton,"
Jetta reminded her, but could tell Cat did not believe that. She had decided Jetta had somehow weaseled her way out of the fate Cat had manipulated for her, and was unwilling to believe otherwise. They were both silent for a moment, and then Cat shook her head.
"I still cannot believe you outmaneuvered me and managed to escape marrying the Marquis."
"Outmaneuvered?"
Jetta asked bitterly, and then shook her head wearily.
"I was not maneuvering at all, Cat. I was trying to save you right up until the moment I found myself strapped to the mast and learned that while I'd been trying to save you, you had been plotting to see me sent in your stead."
Shaking her head with hurt, bewilderment, she asked,
"How could you do that? I tried everything I could to save you. I used every argument I could to sway Father from going through with the contract. And when none of my arguments worked, I even offered to help you escape and go with you to Mother's family to save you."
"Aye,"
Cat said with disgust.
"That would have been fun, would it not? The poor relations depending on the charity of relatives. No betrothed, no prospects, no dower. We would have both ended up little more than unpaid servants, always having to give our thanks for being allowed to scrub the floors for our supper. Nay, I had no interest in that."
Jetta opened her mouth to respond, but then glanced sharply toward the doorway between this room and the next as they heard the door to the master bedchamber open.
"Jetta!" Ollie called.
She didn't get the chance to answer. Movement drew her gaze around just in time to see the hilt of Cat's dagger coming at her. Agony exploded in her forehead, bright and hot, and then just as quickly withdrew, leaving darkness behind. Chapter 19. Concern beginning to clutch at him, Ollie glanced from the empty bed to the door to the little room off the master bedchamber, and started toward it as he called again.
"Jetta?"
He had nearly reached the door when she came hurrying out and crashed into him.
"Oh, husband,"
she said on a laugh, clutching at his arms and leaning into him.
"You startled me."
"Sorry, I was just coming to see if you were in the baby's room."
Sliding his arms around her, he patted her back distractedly.
"The baby's room?"
She pulled back to peer at him with confusion.
"Hey, that's what my parents used that little room behind you for," he explained.
"Oh."
Relaxing, she smiled faintly, and lowered her head to watch her hands curl into the cloth of his plaid, as she asked,
"Is there a reason you wish to see me?"
Glancing up, she flashed her big green eyes at him, and suggested,
"Mayhap you wish to claim your husbandly rights?"